American composers past and present. That's what American Rapture is all about. It's a new recording, and it features harpist Yolanda Condonassis. There are two world premieres on this recording. You'll find out more about that from her and Ward Stair, who's leading the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra on this new release. It's featured this week on New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Amacher. We're talking about a brand new recording called American Rapture. It features conductor Ward Stair with the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra and harpist Yolanda Condonassis. I want to ask you, Ward, first, to talk a little bit about the theme of this recording, which really touches on a wide spectrum of the American experience.
Yeah, well, when we were discussing repertoire options to pair with Jennifer's new concerto, I think rather quickly we sort of got the idea that wouldn't it be wonderful to look at different generations of American sound. And of course, you know, you can trace American sound all the way back to Ives and even before that if you really want to dig deep. But we thought maybe two slots available in addition to the Higdon, and I immediately thought of Barber because he's one of my personal favorites in terms of the American pantheon. He's now getting, I think, more of the attention that he deserves, but for a long time he was kind of a neglected composer, unfortunately. But for me, I've always really been compelled by his lyricism, his craftsmanship, his sense of drama, his sense of form. First Symphony is a piece that I love and I've done all over the place with many different orchestras because it's got all the dramatic power and punch of a Mahler symphony in just a little over 20 minutes, which is great for the orchestra because it's a tour de force for the orchestra. And I wanted, since it's my first recording with my orchestra in Rochester, I wanted us to really be able to sort of, you know, stretch our legs, flex our muscles, and show our stuff. And I also thought it was important to feature the newest generation of American voices, and that's what Patrick Harlan's piece represents. And I thought, you know, what a perfect way to sort of thread together an album and feature these different generations of American sound with Barber, who's sort of in that, you know, that original pantheon with Copland and Bernstein and you know, the likes of, you know, that sort of first glory period of American sound. Jennifer Higdon, who I think is you know, just an extraordinary voice in the American soundscape and sound world and such an important composer. And then Patrick Harlan, who's just, you know, recently come on the scene, but is already making a name for himself and really finding his own voice. It's a really nice combination, I think, of sounds, elements, and styles.
The recording itself is called American Rapture, and are you taking that a little bit from the Harlan piece in terms of the title?
Well, I know that when Patrick first saw it, he called me and he said, "Wow, who picked the title? I love it." So, yeah, it certainly gives a nod to the Rapture, and I think American Rapture, it's a perfect title, really, mm-hmm. for this work, because it takes you to so many different places in the American sound.
And the way Patrick defines rapture in the title of his own piece is that of extreme emotion, not a religious context. And, you know, when putting together this idea of the American sound, the American spirit, it just seemed perfect and very memorable, too, to have, you know, basically a title that says American extreme emotion. This is what we're about. This is our deepest. So, you know, it's been a gratifying project that's kind of evolved in a very inevitable way.
Do either of you want to talk about even the deeper meaning of that Rapture piece? I was just reading a little bit about Patrick Harlan and how he was talking about it relating to ultra cavers. And,
yeah,
you know, do either of you want to share that story?
Sure, I can do that. I can delve into that. pun intended. Yes, the piece was inspired by a book that Patrick read, I believe, called Blind Descent, which chronicles the journey of rival caving teams who were competing to be the first to reach a new depth, one of the deepest places on Earth. So it's kind of broken into three sections. The very opening of the piece captures that sense of excitement and anticipation before starting out on an epic journey. There's a lot of great sort of energy and buzz in the air as it builds toward the goal. And then there's a slower middle section. I get the sense that perhaps the caving team has arrived at a stopping point somewhere. Maybe the tunnel opens up a little bit and they actually have a chance to stretch their legs and look around. Perhaps gaze on a space that no human has ever set foot in before, and you get the sense of wonder and awe and taking just a moment to soak it all in. And then the piece gets moving again as the caving team goes further and further into the earth, back into the darkness, and that's when the rapture really starts to set in. And rapture, as Yolanda said, represents not anything related to religion, but a primal sort of urge to escape and this extreme emotion that cavers describe when they've been under these circumstances of extreme confinement, claustrophobia, total darkness for long, long periods of time in totally uncharted territory. So you can imagine how terrifying that would be at a certain point. Everyone has their breaking point, right? I always like to tell the audience when I describe the piece before we perform it that at the very end, the cavers make it out back to the sunshine and it's a happy ending, so no worries there. And Patrick really does take us on an epic journey in only about 8 minutes.
And you said that you've known this piece for a long time. This, however, is the first time it's been recorded.
That's right. And so that was another reason that I thought of this piece immediately, because I was aware that it hadn't been recorded yet, and I really think it should have been recorded by now, and so I'm honored to be the first to do it.
Wonderful. The Harp Concerto by Jennifer Higdon, that is like the centerpiece of this recording. Let's talk about how this came to be. Yolanda, let's talk a little bit about how the two of you came together to create this wonderful piece.
Well, you know, probably, I would say about 15 years ago, I was standing backstage waiting to walk on and play the Ginastera Harp Concerto, and the orchestra opened the concert with Jennifer's Blue Cathedral, which is one of her most often played and popular works. But it was the first time I was hearing it. And I remember kind of stopping my jumping around warm-up routine backstage long enough to think, wow, that voice, that sound world would be amazing on the harp. And I guess that kind of planted the seed, the early seed at least. And then a few years later, I started taking steps to try and make contact with her and see if I could get in her queue for a harp concerto. And, you know, throughout my career, I've really placed a big importance on trying to get works composed for the harp and works that really explore the full potential of the instrument. And, you know, I've often thought to myself, you know, what would it have been like if we would have had a harp concerto by Bartok or Prokofiev or Shostakovich? And I do feel that Jennifer is going to be one of those American composers that really stands the test of time, and her works are going to be iconic. And so I really kind of stuck in there and nudged her over a prolonged period of time and got this project moving and assembled a consortium of orchestras, you know, many of whom the conductors are friends of mine. We go way back. Ward and I have known each other for quite a many years, and it really seemed like a really natural choice for the Rochester Philharmonic and Ward to be the lead orchestra and the world premiere orchestra. You know, very much also, you know, it's heartland of America as well. And this American sound embodied on the whole album and certainly in Jennifer's Harp Concerto, I think, is important to kind of highlight in a more holistic sense in terms of the listening experience. And it's just, you know, it's been really rewarding to travel this path with Jennifer.
I know she said that your enthusiasm for your instrument is really infectious. How did that impact the work that she created for you? Do you know?
Well, you know, Ward just said something that I think is probably pretty true, in that this harp concerto does kind of express my personality as both a person and a player. I'm not quite the ethereal brand of harpist, and yet I can be a pretty introspective and quiet person. And in this piece, you have a first and a third movement that kind of embody that more introspective approach to the instrument. And then the second and fourth movements are really pretty powerful pack-a-punch tour de force movements. And that is maybe kind of the alter ego of my personality, which is you know, just really good, loves a good musical romp and a lot of spirit and a lot of color and a lot of sound. And one of the things I asked Jennifer for when we were in our early discussions is a groove. I really wanted to be able to catch a musical wave with the orchestra and not just sit there quietly while the orchestra cut loose and then I came in when all was quiet. And I had my harp installed with a jack and a microphone inside the soundboard so that we wouldn't have to be so careful and touchy about balance. And, you know, technology has improved so much that you can get a very, very real acoustic sound with the right equipment and yet really be able to hear it. And I think that was an important part of this process. And I think kind of moving the harp genre forward as well, that, you know, you really should be able to hear the harp when you go to a concert to listen to a harp solo. So I think that was a really good step forward in a general sense.
You said something in an interview that I watched. In addition to being an ambassador of the harp, you're also selling the instrument to the audience. I thought that was intriguing.
Well, I think, you know, the harp is a little bit of an oddball. It's an instrument that a lot of people don't even think of as a solo instrument unless it's in kind of a more of a background capacity. And I think probably throughout my own career, at least one of my objectives has been to promote the harp in more of a solo capacity. And that's all I do. I did a lot of orchestral playing in my early career, but pretty soon on, I decided that my interest and my passion lay in primarily solo playing, and that's what I've pursued for the last three decades. And so most of what I do is play solos with orchestras. And, you know, when you do that, you cannot be very retiring in personality or sound. You've got to really, you know, make a presence. And I find that many people who come up to the CD signing table at intermission after I played a concerto will tell me maybe one of two things, both of which make me very happy. One of the things is, this is the first time I've ever heard a harp in that context. I, you know, my daughter had a harp at her wedding, but this is the first time I've heard a harp really go toe-to-toe with an orchestra and be featured in a big hall. So that's maybe the first comment that makes me happy. The second comment is, wow, I've heard the harp before, but I've never heard it like that. And that makes me really happy too, because, you know, the harp has so many facets to its personality. And I think when you ask the question, you know, I feel like I have to sell the instrument, I feel like maybe not so much sell as introduce, illuminate, provide a window into more dimensions than might previously have been perceived of the instrument. And, you know, it's a nice challenge. It's nice to have a challenge in life. And it's audience by audience, recording by recording. And, you know, it feels good to have a mission.
When Jennifer Higdon writes a concerto, I know she really likes to bring the qualities of the instrument, you know, to the forefront. What qualities does she bring out in the harp and that you're most pleased about?
Well, I think, you know, she runs the gamut throughout this four-movement work. The first movement is called First Light. And it almost is like, you know, sitting on a mountaintop watching a sunrise. It starts very quietly with the harp alone, which I think is a stroke of brilliance, because one of the things that I told her was that an audience really needs to latch on to the sound of the harp. Before you start blending it, I think audiences have to know what they're listening for, what they're extracting from the larger texture, and that it's such a wonderful way to bring listeners into the portal of this piece. And then she travels from this very beautiful kind of introductory movement to just a really fun kick of a movement called Joyride, which is exactly what the title might suggest. It's fun to play. I think it's a lot of fun to hear. It's buoyant. It's effervescent. And you know, there's a lot for an audience to grab onto. While there's not necessarily a tune to hum, you certainly walk out sort of tapping your toe and with that movement lodged in your mind. The third movement, Lullaby, is just a complete departure from the movement before. Because it's an intimate, very, very chamber music textured. The musicians, it's a small number of musicians playing together in a very delicate interplay with each other. And, you know, we had a lot of fun bringing out the layers of that movement. It's one of those pieces that I think that every time I play it, I'm going to discover some new layer, some new texture that I might not have previously, you know, been aware of. And then the last movement, Rapnok, starts out with the harp as basically a member of the percussion section. And, you know, I've often said I'm a sort of a frustrated percussionist. And so I get to really kind of get in the pocket, get in the groove with the percussion section by knocking on the soundboard of the harp. And that's a lot of fun to do. It's an intricate rhythm. It's not a loose rhythm. You really, everybody has to be, you know, very, very intricately woven together and listening. So it's challenging in a way, but it's a wonderful way to open that last sort of glimpse of personality of the harp, which then kind of evolves into a wonderful, powerful, kind of quirky, almost surreal, at least harmonically speaking, movement that ends with a real, real bang. And that was another thing I asked Jennifer for. I said, you know, please, you know, I don't want to end this whole piece with either a whimper or a sigh. I really want it to end with some power and, you know, just, it doesn't have to be happy power. It just has to be power. And I think it is, it's sort of a wonderful combination of powerful without being trite. And, you know, I think she managed an amazing challenge in putting this piece together.
Warren, what is your reaction to this harp concerto? Because you hadn't heard it before, right? Until you all sat down and started to put it together.
Right. And that's always a really exciting moment when when you get the delivery of the new piece and you open that envelope or box or whatever it comes in, you crack that score for the very, very first time. And I remember I was very excited when I finally got the score and just going through it. I really had no idea what to expect. And as I started to look at it, first I look at it kind of in broad strokes and then get more into the nitty-gritty details. But the first thing, four movements instead of three, that surprised me a little bit. And then when I looked at the scale of the third movement, and Yolanda was just talking about it and how beautifully intimate and delicate it is, I thought, wow, this is special. This is unique. This is something that's going to make this concerto stand out, I think, in the repertoire. And so that fascinated me. And then as I looked at just, the scope, I think, that Jennifer, she's got such a broad range of sounds, and she's invented some new ones, too. There's some things in the percussion that you'll hear that, to my knowledge, have never been done before. I remember I looked at the score and this indication, and she was very specific about it, and I knew the percussionist would ask me too, and I asked her as soon as I saw her, but she takes a crotale, which is like a small cymbal, that, and you actually strike it and then move it onto the top of the snare drum, and as it gets close to the head of the drum, the snares start to vibrate, and then you drop it so the vibration stops, and it sounds like it's like a new way to have a little roll effect on the snare drum, and it's so cool. There are a lot of other examples of just really great innovative touches that Jennifer puts throughout the piece, and so it's a piece that I still, every time I look at it, I discover something new, and I think it's got a lot to give for many, many years to come.
You know, one kind of interesting thing I might mention is that another thing I asked Jennifer for was to really let me play the harp some in this piece, because I have to say that, I've played a lot of contemporary music where it's been more sort of a catalog of special effects, but the way she's used the special effects on the harp are very idiomatic, and I actually get to play, virtuosic, fun, colorful things on the harp strings. And sometimes now I think there is the temptation of just kind of going for nothing but special effects, but she's married the two ideas really well.
Harpist Yolanda Condonassis with conductor Ward Stair and the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra on a new recording called American Rapture. That's new classical tracks from American Public Media, with special thanks to Valerie Kaler for producing this episode. I'm Julia Mocker.